Randy Garris has been a friend of our campus ministries for a very, very long time, and it's been really fun to be able to see him over the years make an impact on just anybody that's been on staff. I know can speak directly to some of his wisdom that's poured into our marriages, but even as staff, I think he's done a lot to help us develop what you get to see and what you get to experience in your campus ministries as well. So he's been a friend of ours for a very long time, and super exciting to have him back. Would you welcome Randy, please?
In all honesty, some of you have to think, did they give a pass from the nursing home for this guy? I try to leave my walker behind the stage just so it's not as obvious, but it is good to be with you. I am honored to be a guy in my closer to my mid-60s than I am in my earlier 60s. And to get to hang out with college kids, it's an absolute joy. I thank you for the privilege. I also know, as the game is described, you're going to play Assassin this week. Nothing says Christian love quite like Assassin. But I've played that game a lot through the years, and people are always so excited to get my name. Big, white, slow-moving target. I mean, that's kind of what I think they're really excited about. So if you get my name tomorrow, you know, more power to you on that sort of thing. I guess I could start light, but I want to get into pretty heavy stuff pretty quickly, I guess. I know that my generation owes you an apology. You've grown up in a world that has incredible stuff in it. It is an incredible world. But the world we gave you lacks one little thing. We don't know how to make a family work. We don't know how to go home and be safe. We don't know how to fall in love with somebody and have it last a lifetime. And other than that one little thing, we handed you some pretty good stuff. This weekend, what I want to try to do is it's going to sound arrogant. Please cut me some slack, because I don't mean it that way. I'm just the guy. But I don't intend to fill your time. It sounds very, very arrogant when I say it, but my intention is to change your world. I realize that all I am is just a guy, but Christ and other people changed my world with the things we're going to talk about. I've been married 41 years. My children love the Lord. My grandchildren are loving the Lord. I'm married to a woman that I had no right marrying. People think I must have got her liquored up to marry me. I have no idea why. And it has been the most amazing journey. It has been the most incredible privilege. We had some stuff going on with our family that's really, really tender. And I held my wife's hands this week, and a tear's running down my cheek. And I'm not even emotional. Guys, for the most part, I am a guy. But as I held my wife's hand, I couldn't help but say, thank you, sweetheart. Anything ever happens to me, you need to know. I could have never dreamed of a marriage this fun and this good. What my intention for you is, one of these days, I intend for your 15-year-old daughter to turn to you and say, Dad, Mom, thank you. Thank you, Dad, that you love Mom like you did. I see so many others that don't. Dad, thank you for how you did that. And Dad, thank you for the kind of home we grew up in. And Dad, I could never repay you. Right now, you're sitting here as a 19, 20, 22, college senior, 31, 34. You're just sitting here in a chair. But this thing will tilt that direction. Who are you going to be when that time comes? And so my intention is to aim pretty high. And let me jump in just with some stuff that I think we have to lay as a base. The first two sessions are really, really critical about relationships, and they have nothing to do with the other person. Oh, they do some, but no. The first two sessions, I want to talk about you. Because who you are is the most dominant, prominent thing in any relationship. Now, all of us have this sort of question at this age going, who should I marry and what should they look like and what should they be and how should they act and how should they talk and all those sort of things. That's not the first question. The first question is, who am I? Love is a pretty amazing thing. It's a blast. God hardwired you to love. That sense of wanting desperately to love and be loved is instinctive in you. God put it in you. The same way that whales seem to instinctively know how to cross an ocean. The same way that birds know how to migrate. It's instinctive. I came off a farm background. In fact, I was there on Saturday with my dad, who's 88, and a calf was just born. His dad's still a rancher, what he's doing. I know this doesn't light everybody's fire, so my apology, but it has fascinated me to this day that a little old calf hits the ground, and he stands up on four little old sticks we call legs, and he's never stood before, but he seems to know he has to get to his feet. He stands to his feet on these four little old shaky sticks, and he's never had the taste of milk. He has never seen light. He has no concept of an udder. And he begins to look for milk and begin to take the forehead and just begin to slightly bump it against the side of his mother, trying to find something he has never seen or tasted before. God hardwired it. There is your life in that milk. Go find this thing. You're born with that same instinct. You're born with the instinct to love and be loved. I don't care if you're a scoundrel or a saint. Everybody has the same instinct. Go to the darkest prison in Illinois. You go into the deepest maximum security. That guy wants to love his mom. He wants to love his wife and wants to love his kids. You say, well, okay, so terrific. God, you made us to love and be loved is instinctive. Yeah, the desire to love and be loved is instinctive. Here's the problem. The problem is the ability to love is not instinctive. The ability to love does not come out of your heart. The desire to love comes out of your heart, if I'm going to use a sort of a visual metaphor. The ability to love does not come from here. Everybody has the instinctive desire to love and be loved. The problem is the ability to love comes out of your backbone. It comes out of your character. It comes out of your wholeness. It requires that you reach into your character, the deepest part of who you are, and love makes claims on you that you have enough wholeness to live out. Love requires that you're patient when you don't want to be patient, that you're kind when you didn't necessarily choose to be kind. It requires that you forgive when forgiveness is very, very hard. It requires you have the courage to confront and say things that ought to be said because they're true and right and are good for the other person, but your natural tendency is not to say those things. Love requires that you be a grown-up. Don't mean that offensively, but marriage is made for grown-ups. And the problem is we are an activity-based culture, not a relationship-based culture. And because of that, we're highly skilled at activities and we're not very skilled at relationships. And so what happens is we have the natural desire, the instinctive desire to love and be loved, and we fall in love starting in fourth grade in this culture. In seventh grade, and sophomores, and seniors, and college, and on it goes. And the instinctive desire, and we say, wow, This is great. I fell in love. No. You don't understand. Time out. Falling in love is easy. Anybody can do that. Fools will do that. In fact, fools will do it many times. There has to be a wholeness that you reach into your life and you live out the claims that love puts on you. I know I can get into some pretty real emotional issues here for you. You need to know your dad wanted to love you. Your dad didn't look at you as a 4-year-old or 7-year-old or 12-year-old or 15-year-old and go, you're just a stinking lousy. I don't want to love you. I've done this for too long. I've met with thousands of families. I can tell you beyond the shadow of a doubt, here's a 60-some-year-old guy talking to a bunch of 18 to 24-year-olds. I can tell you beyond the shadow of a doubt, your dad wanted to love you. Your dad cried himself to sleep many nights. His pillow is stained with tears because he wanted to love your mom. He wanted to love you, but Here was the problem. When your dad reached into his backbone, into his character, into his wholeness to live out the things that love required, he kept coming up empty-handed, and he kept getting frustrated. He just kept trying to do something he couldn't seem to figure out how to do. Your dad, when he went to work in the mornings, I guarantee you there's mornings he sat in that F-150 pickup and he slammed his fist on that steering wheel. I guarantee you there's days he cussed as he's in that going, why the hell can I not do this? The problem is not that he didn't want to love you. The problem is your dad made promises to your mom and to you as a baby when he carried you out of the hospital. Promises he couldn't keep because he lacked wholeness. And what happens is you can blame yourself for a while, but after a while, you either crumble under that constant blame, or you get a seed of bitterness, and so you reverse it. And now you begin to decide, the reason I can't love you is it's your fault. If you just walk on eggs the right way, if you just look at me the right way, if you would just say the right thing, if you would have just done this, if you'd have just done that. And some of you grew up with parents, a mom or a dad, you tried to walk on eggs and negotiate and tried to figure out what mood dad was in or what mood mom was in, and you just couldn't pull this silly stuff off, and it made you sick, nervous to your stomach. You didn't know how to deal with it. It wasn't you. What you had was somebody who had the heart to love, but not the wholeness. And so what happens in this culture over and over and over again is we have people who lean in life. They don't stand with wholeness. They don't stand with full growth in their life. And because they lean, they find each other and think, this will be the remedy to my lack of wholeness. And all it is a steroid that amplifies because I just made it worse. And so what I want to talk to you about and what I want to say to you is I don't want you in relationships that you're signing checks you can't cash, that you're making promises you can't keep. Everybody in this room has the instinctive desire to love and be loved, but to really love requires two things. We don't get to talk a lot about those two things. One, it requires wholeness, and two, it requires some concepts that you understand. You have to understand concepts and have the wholeness to live the concepts out. What should have happened in life, and what should be happening for most of you right now, is not dating, not close dating relationships. Now, I'm not mad at anybody. I'm not trying to do something weird or strange here. But I'm going to tell you, for the most part, what should happen is that you should, in a perfect world, you would have grown up with a family that taught you wholeness, and with friends who taught you wholeness, and you danced with God to make up the lack in your family and your friends. And if the Lord, you came to wholeness, and two whole people can come together and choose to love each other for a lifetime, and there's a pretty amazing story that happens, and it's a never-ending story. It's a sweet one. But if you're this doesn't work. You say, well, I'm just going to try. We'll try really, really hard. Trying hard is overrated. Now, it beats not trying, okay? Trust me. But honestly, trying doesn't get us there. Look at me. Say, Randy, we could feed 10,000 children tomorrow if you would just run a marathon and run every step.
Well, I'll try.
Look at me. 26.2 miles. I don't care how hard I try at mile 12, 14, 18, mile 21, first half mile. I don't know. Somewhere along the line, no matter how hard I try, what you found is I didn't train to it. And if I didn't train to it, trying cannot overcome lack of training to it. Now, you'd be dumber than a post if you came to me and said, hey, Randy, I need a brain surgery. Would you do my brain surgery? Well, I'll try. You would run. Why? Because no matter how hard I try, you know good and well my doing your brain surgery, this isn't going to turn out well for you. But if you say, Randy, I'd like you to do my brain surgery, there's 11 years to train to it, I can do that. You give me 11 years, I can do that. Right now, most of you should be in the stage of life that you are training to the thing that you will spend the rest of your life in, which is loving well a family. Loving well. And if you don't train to it, the instincts won't get you there. You say, well, what is wholeness? What is wholeness? That, I think, for the most part, requires more time than we have this weekend, but let me hit some light things. I'd encourage you, if you want to know what wholeness is, and if you have wholeness, read the book of Proverbs. And as you read the book of Proverbs and read it over and over again, and when you look and see the man of wisdom or the woman of wisdom, will you ask yourself, does this look like me? Is this the journey I'm on? Is this me? When you see the foolish individual, your question is this me? Because it's a mirror that will hold it back up. Well, when you're reading through Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans, Ephesians, and you're reading through the scripture, and you see what the man of godliness looks like, and the man of maturity looks like, and the man of discipleship looks like, when you can say, I'm not there yet, but I'm on that road. That concept is so important. The scriptures will say, for example, in Proverbs, run from a foolish woman. Run. Why? I haven't described her personality, how funny she is. I haven't described, you know, all the neat things about her. Yeah, I know. She's charismatic, and she's beautiful, and she's fun, and she's funny. But here's the problem. She leans. Run. Run from the foolish man. Yeah, but do you know he looks after me so well, and he's so thoughtful, and he does this? No, you don't understand. You got the window dressing mixed up with the backbone. Run. How do you know when somebody's whole? You go to the book of Proverbs would be one quick way. Let me narrow it down a little tighter. I think there are three things in particular that begin to be indicators of wholeness. Number one will be contentment. How content are you in your own skin as a son or daughter of the living God? We're made in the image of God. The only thing on the face of the earth made in the image of God is us. God didn't make the mountains in his image. God didn't make the animals in his image. He made everything that he made out of his creative nature. But the one thing God said, I'm going to make out of my nature is a human being. And he made us in his nature. And our worth and value doesn't come because we're a commodity. Your worth and value doesn't come because you can hit baseballs a long way or golf balls a long way or something. Your worth and value doesn't come because you're pretty enough, skinny enough, talented enough, or well-liked enough. Your worth and value doesn't come because you climbed some dirt pile called a classroom and you got to the top of the class and any one of these sort of things. It doesn't come. It comes because I know who I am. I am loved and I'm made in the image of God. Every one of you has a gazillion post-it notes stuck on you. Post-it notes you picked up from preschool and second grade. You're dumb, you're stupid, you're not funny, you're not as funny as you think you are, you're selfish, you're this. We have post-it notes all over us. And we're trying to figure out whose post-it notes are, and the Lord invites us to come. Let me sing over you. Let me tell you who you are. Let me peel the post-it notes off of you. Let me stop the voices inside your own head that are lying to you as well. Let me help you become content in your own skin, made in my image. Let me speak a word of blessing over you. Don't we run into the rest of the world to bless you? Some of you guys that played sports, you didn't play sports because you love sports. You played because you hoped there was a blessing in it. You thought if coach would bless you, or maybe the team would bless you, maybe your dad would give you a blessing, and you played sports for the blessing. You either live your life from the blessing, the one the Lord gave you, or you spend your whole life rather frantically running looking for a blessing. Some of you girls are in dating relationships. Truth is, because you're trying to find the blessing. If Would someone please speak a blessing over me? And the Lord whispers, yeah. Come here, kid. Come here. Let me sing over you. That's Zephaniah, by the way. Let me tell you in Isaiah 49 how much I love you. Can a mother forget the baby she's nursed at her breast? Of course not. But even if she could, I wouldn't forget you. I've engraved your names on the palm of my hand. Your frame is ever before me. I mean, it's Isaiah 49 passage. These are passages, Jeremiah 31, Isaiah 30. It's Jesus hugging lepers. You're not supposed to read a story so that you find out Jesus one time blessed a guy with leprosy. What you're supposed to read a story and realize when nobody else, the one who made you in his image, sees you even with leprosy, and he wraps his arms around you, and he speaks a word of blessing over you. Nobody has wholeness until most of the post-it notes have finally fallen off, and they know how to live from the blessing. I'm going to tell you right now, a career will not give you the blessing. God made you creative, and you ought to go do a career because out of your creativity, there's some neat things you can do. But if you go to a career for your identity, you're in trouble. I don't care what it is. If it comes out of your creative nature, you're one of 64 Crayolas in a box that God made. Great, go mark your Crayola everywhere. But you can't go into a career for identity. So the first big question on wholeness has to do with contentment. The second one we're going to talk about in the morning, so I won't spend much time on. Tomorrow is do you have emotional maturity? Are you a victim to your emotions? Do your moods dictate who you are? Have you figured out how to take the emotions God gave you and have them know they're blessed? And have you been able to bring them into the light and maturity? So tomorrow morning we'll talk about that. If you don't have emotional maturity, you don't have wholeness. The third one is because we're made in the image of God, he made us so that we love justice and love mercy. He made us so that we have the same nature he has. He works, we work. All those sort of things leads down to this one. Do you have the kind of morals? Is right and wrong and clarity in your own life? I'm not talking about imposing it on anybody else. I'm talking about do you live in the light where God is in the light? And if you find somebody whose morality is a little shifting and blows in the wind, you don't have it. Let me give you a quick headline here. I'm jumping ahead. Girls, if you're dating a guy who can't keep his hands off you, off your breasts or anything else, you don't have a whole guy. Guys, I got a clue for you. If you've got a girl for whom holiness and living in the light is a real struggle for her, you don't have wholeness. Just this. Those are nothing more than just flashing red light. Lack of wholeness here. So where we begin on all this is, do you have those three things? In this world, what should have happened is you should be building up a set of godly friends around you, not just your own age group, but a set of godly friends around you, and you are driven to meet the Lord, and between those godly friends and meeting the Lord, there is unfinished business that gets finished in your life and you grow up. I've done, 700-800 weddings probably. I'm so embarrassed sometimes when I see the bridesmaids and the groomsmen. Oh, they're having fun and all of that, and I don't even mean they're embarrassed. I've seen every goofy thing imaginable. Well, that's not true. I have not seen every goofy thing imaginable. I have seen the ring come out of the baptistry with somebody in scuba gear. I have seen the boat come across the lake. I've seen the airplane come flying in and bring the ring. I've seen the goat bring the ring in. I mean, any number of things. I've seen the bridesmaids pass out. On and on and on it goes. But those aren't the things that embarrass me. What embarrasses me is I realize that there's a set of college buddies. Your job was to help raise each other up to wholeness so that that girl went home with him. You're the best man in his life. When that girl went home with him, you had taken the sharp edges off of his life. You had helped him grow up. In community, you had lived such a life that all of you grew up and you became a band of brothers, and you could applaud when he walked down the aisle with that girl because you knew she's going to be cared for. This is a man who has the substance to love. You weren't best men, you were accomplices. You didn't help in your college years turn him to be somebody who will raise a 5-year-old boy one of these days with dignity and honor and courage and backbone. What you had was just another doofus guy who got through college and had fun and didn't necessarily go into a train wreck of some kind. But you didn't raise up the man you called a friend. I've seen the bridesmaids, and I wanted to cry because the shallowness on the side just made you want to pull your hair out, because what happened is these were girls that should have been shaping each other's lives. The Holy Spirit was put in you, and if you would have listened to it, if you had followed it, and if you would have sought the Holy Spirit and these godly girlfriends in your life, if they would have, wow, the kind of woman who went home with that man, that would have been an impressive act in your life, but you didn't. You were accomplices. In this culture, do not follow its guide. It doesn't help you. I'm not telling you to perpetually put off deep relationships. I'm just saying put them off until there's enough wholeness to live out the things that love requires. You've grown up with literally thousands of hours of relationship with relationship seminars. You've been to a gazillion hours of marriage seminars. You say, really? I don't remember signing up. Oh, yeah, you did. Your mom was busy and life was hectic and she flipped on Disney. And you watched, and you can go Belle and the Beast. And you watch it, and it's a great movie. I like Beauty and the Beast. But here's one of the stories in it. You can be a beast in life and you're not content in your life, and you're sick at your own life, and you don't like your own life, and you're miserable at your own life. But if you get the right Belle who comes into your life, suddenly you're rescued. And so what the real secret to a beast is, just look for a good Belle. And when a Belle will come in, when you see this guy and you go, you know, he's just not what he ought to be, but I can be his rescuer. I can come along. And I didn't like him at first, but eventually I began to spend enough time with him, and we were on the praise team together and the whole nine yards. And the next thing you know, Belle and the Beast, and it's wonderful. It turns out great. No, it doesn't. Disney gets to stop the movie. And because it's a fantasy, they can do it where they want to do. By the way, sometimes it's reversed. Sometimes it's Belle and the Beastette, okay? But it's in your mind. You know it. It's there. It's there. I'm not quite content. There's a hole in my chest. I'm not quite right. But if I just could get the right person in my life, they would help me get right. Ariel. You can have daddy issues and things aren't going well under the sea, but at the face above the water, if you could just get the right face above the water. And the only people who really hate you are the people who try to keep you apart. And you get your whole voice and life when you find the face out of the water. Or maybe you're having mother issues. You and your mom don't get along, and you got this hair you can't do anything with. Bad hair day often. And you meet Flynn. And Flynn, and well, he's not really Flynn. And you think about him. one after another after another. All of our seminars have said, I hurt, but I'll stop hurting when the right person comes in my life. That's how the neighbors got what the neighbors have got. You see, we've grown up in a Ken and Barbie world. The secret to your life is the other one. I've told this story so many times through the years because it's just so poignant to me. I feel sorry for Pete and Ben and Joe and all of those, you know, the Barry and on it goes. Those of you who have heard me tell this story so many times. I was walking through the lobby or the foyer of our church, and sitting on the couch was a second grade girl, first or second grade girl. And as she's sitting there, she's just crying up a storm. Well, I knew her pretty well, and I went and sat on beside her and said, what's wrong, sweetie? And just my being there and just a little act of kindness, she just laid her head against my side, and she just cried and shook. When she finished crying where she could finally talk, she sat up, and I said, what's wrong, sweetie? She said, Mr. Garris, none of the boys in my class will go with me. Oh, brother. What? Go to the monkey bars? Go to the water fountain? Go get the chocolate milk? What? I don't understand. What? And so I'm trying to suppress a little bit of a grin. And she ripped my heart out. Because the next sentence went like this. And Mr. Garris, in my class, if none of the boys will go with you, you're a nobody. Anybody in the room know that class? In the kingdom of God, there's a sweeter call. There's a sweeter call to relationships. That sweeter call, by far, is I don't want you to turn a relationship into an idol. It'll never work. Idolatry always takes something that God made that is good, and you pervert it and you twist it for its purpose. You read scripture and you hear about wine, and it's always used in a biblical context of celebration and joy. It's used wine in the context of it's a gift of God. I got enough alcoholics in my family. You see, my cousin Ronnie, who I love dearly, Ronnie took this thing of wine that could be celebration, but he perverted what it's for. Ronnie said he only got drunk one time, and that's true. He said, I just got drunk one time. It just lasted 25 years. Ronnie's walked away from it. But that's what idolatry is. Idolatry takes anything good that God gives and perverts it. God designed relationships for family, but they're designed for whole people. And if you need a relationship for you to be okay, it's idolatry. There's kind of a little cheap line I use, and I don't mean it as cheaply as it sounds. I can say this. If you have to be in a relationship to be okay, you'll never be in an okay relationship. And if you're waiting to be in a relationship so that you will be okay, the relationship you're probably going to be in will not be okay. Here's your call. That I will love my husband or wife that I will have someday in the future. I will love them enough that I will finish unfinished business and learn to stand on my own two feet. If you're not happy and content and thriving as a single, you will not be happy and content and thriving in a marriage. In fact, I heard a great sermon this week. I mean a fabulous sermon on singleness this week. I'd love to turn it in and play it. A friend of mine named Doug Welch preached it. You can There's this YouTube machine, you know, kind of like Google machine, YouTube machine. You go look up Doug Welch, Ozark Christian College, A Theology of Singleness, preached this last Tuesday. Phenomenal. Phenomenal message. Here's what needs to happen. I need to grow up. Where we actually need to begin to fall in love with each other is in the process of discovering the wholeness in their life and the wholeness in our life, and then you can find something. One of my favorite passages of Scripture is Proverbs 25, 28. It's the very last verse in Proverbs 25. In that very last verse, it says that a man without discipline, which, by the way, in the Hebrew, that word discipline, the word wholeness, the word wisdom, they're pretty interchangeable words. But in Proverbs 25, it says, a man without wholeness or discipline is like a city without walls. And I'm driving this point a long time. I know I'm staying on this point. I know I am. If I were singing a song, this would be called a monotone. But in Proverbs 25, 28, it says this: a man without discipline or wholeness is like a city without walls. I want you to picture two cities side by side. Picture more biblical times, obviously. One city has walls, one city doesn't have walls. In both cities, they want the same things. And they kiss their kids on the forehead and tuck them in a bed at night. They sing songs over their children. In both cities, they have anniversaries for their parents. And both, they play t-ball in the backyard. In both places, they put the winter wheat inside for storage so they can plant it in the spring. They have the same hopes and dreams. One city with walls, one city without. Here's the problem. Come spring, the city with walls, it has all of its hopes and dreams intact. The city without walls, it doesn't, because raiders came and took things away. The children were kidnapped. The parents were killed by marauders. Thieves and life destroyed everything in the city without walls. The most dangerous man or woman on the face of the earth is not the scoundrel. The scoundrel really does relatively little damage, because we figure the scoundrel out pretty quick and we step back and go, not in my life. No, the most dangerous man or woman on the face of the earth tends to be the person who wants the right things, who talks about the right things, who sings about the right things, who has conversations about the right things, who dates a girl or a guy, and they have dreams about how they're going to raise their kids. But the problem is, you are a city without walls, and when that man goes home with you, here's what he's going to find. Or when this woman goes home with you, she's going to find your wife, the whole of her life, is trying to get just the love in this family to flow from a husband who will love us. But he never grew up. Can you change? Absolutely. Absolutely. I've met with about 4,000 couples in problem marriage counseling. I promise you, you can grow up, but it's like labor pains. It is so difficult and hard. My parents have this phenomenal marriage, about 65 years of marriage. Incredible marriage, except I was around in the early days. I'm the oldest child, and I watched my parents move from a marriage that was hard on my mom's heart and hard on my dad's heart, and I watched them grow up in that marriage. I walked across one day the yard. My dad's John Wayne. I mean, he just is. We walked across the yard, and I pointed at a tree and said to my dad, I said, man, that thing is so big. I said, I remember as a kid when we planted that. I said, that I can't believe how fast that thing, or how much it's grown. My dad took about 4 or 5 more steps and said, I hate that tree. John Wayne hating a tree? That doesn't make sense. And then my dad went about 5 to 10 more steps. And my dad said, the day we planted that tree was the day I was trying to decide whether to leave your mother or not. They pulled it back. And they both grew up and made a great marriage in the marriage. So who do you date? Who do you marry? Somebody who is as relentlessly pursuing wholeness as you are. I fell in love with my wife not by dating my wife. I fell in love with her before I ever had a date with her. My wife hit campus with more social capital than anybody I've probably ever seen hit a campus before. I had several classes with her. And as I watched her, I'll tell you what blew me away. I mean, she'd been Oklahoma's representative at the World's Fair as a soloist. She had sung in the Midwest Governors Conferences, and she was just a gal with personality. But there was such a genuineness, and I saw how she treated people who had no social capital. She was so kind. She was so patient and so sincere and so invested, and I thought, I guess I got a chance. And I fell in love with her because of who she was before we ever had a date. I dated her so she would get a chance maybe to know who I was and find out if she could forgive a doofus. She was more mature when we got married than I was. I'm sure I had probably more of this than she did. But she was patient. And I would wish for you the same kind of marriage we have had. This concept matters so much that all I can say to you is don't reverse the order. You're in a culture that wants to have the DTR way too quick. How do we determine our relationship? You go to Taco Bell, spend $4 on her, and you have a conversation for 2 hours. What's our relationship? Some of you girls should pay for your own Taco Bell because this thing gets too expensive on how it plays out, okay? Do you mind picking up, I'm not gonna walk in front of that speaker. Would you pick up that easel there? Or an easel, and two markers that are right there beside it. And I need a human, come here, if you wouldn't mind. I need a human easel. Thank you. Fine job. Vanna won't have her job forever, you know, and so I think there's a chance that it's, you know. Can I show you, just this is simple as it goes. A little higher, sorry. That's pretty rude, but yeah. Relationships work on an arc principle. Now, that arc is pretty poorly drawn, but they work on an arc principle. What that means is there's a sequence that they just naturally take when they work right. It goes a little like this. You start out down here as a whole individual, and they start out as a whole individual, and you start a journey of becoming acquainted, a journey of where you learn to appreciate each other, and you learn to trust one another, and you learn to see the depth, and you learn to see how they handle crisis, and you learn how they handle fun, and you learn all kinds of things about them. Common interest, quite frankly, is massively overrated. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Character is what you're actually looking for. You'll figure it out at some level, and your relationship goes a little bit deeper, and you, quite frankly, kind of do the same things again. So you find another level of trust, another level of commitment, another level of, and what happens is up here you have marriage, and I'm going to go ahead and put the sexual relationship in here because that's where it fits, and then somewhere after you have intimacy. Intimacy and sex are not the same thing. Intimacy is where two people no, for the rest of my life, I'm safe. We have a oneness. Well, what should happen is this takes a little bit of a time and a process. With the American culture, what we do is we don't start out with whole people. We date for a little while, and we cut across to the illusion of intimacy. We cut across. I don't want to take the time that it takes. I don't want to do the kinds of things that are required. I don't want to have. And so what happens is you get the illusion of intimacy up here. In particular, you become sexual. You've grown up in a pornographic culture. You guys, I feel bad for you. It's like you've been born and raised in a brothel. And you become sexually active at some level with each other. And the reason you do is because you so badly want to feel like you're connected to somebody. And it's an illusion. It's a placebo. And what's left out is here. And you say, well, we'll just go back and fill that back in. We cut across. We got a little sexual, too active, too quick. We cut across, but we'll fill it back in. How many of you girls put your makeup on in the morning? You can put your arm down a little bit. And thought afterwards, I didn't put enough foundation on. I'm going to slide it back underneath. You don't slide foundation back underneath. I've tried several times. But that's another story for another day. You don't build a house and say the foundation's not strong enough. I want to raise the house up and put more foundation. So what you end up with is marriage is built on a fraud. Here's what I'd like you to ask you to do. And I'm going to quit here in a second. You just want me to quit. Here's what I ask you to do. I'm going to ask you to run a relationship on an ARC principle. I'm going to ask you for whole people to start out down here. I'm going to ask you to spend the first good portion of figuring each other out in group relationship with your friends. Stop dating one-on-one as much as you do. Stop dating one-on-one as soon as you do. Truth is, when Julie dated me, I could put on about any persona I want. I could act out as I wanted, as I wished I were. It was only in the accompaniment of my friends did you really know kind of who I am. Hang out with your friends. Hang out and date in ways that you're in multiple generations with you, but it's a group type thing. I'm going to tell you, there is a place that you do start dating and you do spend time alone, but you had better be wise. I mean, so wise on this stage in here. Because what you'll end up doing is deeply hurting one another with your lack of wholeness if you're not careful. You have to discover it and figure it out. And then you do begin to date individually in this engagement time period or whatever it is you put in here. And you have to go to a deeper one. And then you get married, and then the sexual life occurs, and then intimacy begins to come. But this is the way it's designed. Don't go with the crap the culture gives you. It doesn't work. I'm sick and tired. My secretary holding babies while parents fight it out of my office. I'm sick and tired of meeting even with college kids. All day long I meet with college kids. I started having college kids live with me in 1996. And all day long I meet with college kids, but my previous job and what I do now. And you tell me stories about homes that weren't where they... Do your kids a favor. Come to wholeness. Come to wholeness. The sweetest gifts that God will give you are the gifts where you decide, here's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to put the pressure on a man or a woman to complete me and fill me. I'm going to pursue the living God, and I want to come to wholeness. And when I do, I want to find somebody else who has found the same journey, and we're going to build a love that lasts a lifetime. We'll pick this up tomorrow. God bless.